Accession number 6107, Reel 1.
Mrs. Ackerman, Reel 1. Now, the first thing that interested me was just to ask you what Shanghai was like as a place to grow up in.
Well, I lived in the French Concession and didn't really know much about the city itself.
Mm-hmm.
Children's lives are so confined to the place they live in, the very centre, and their lives are so small that I don't really remember a very great deal about it.
Yeah. Do you remember any nice things about it, things that perhaps you might not have enjoyed if you'd been growing up in England?
The very wide variety of different nationalities there were there, so that we celebrated just about every national day there was, and that I do remember. But as far as it being China was concerned, I don't think China really affected us much. We lived such European lives in China.
Yes. Even the schools that you attended, the other children would all be European, wouldn't they?
They were at my school. Mm. I went to the Cathedral Girls' School, and they were all European.
Did you number any Chinese amongst your friends?
Very few, very few. I think none, really. It was, I think, a great pity.
Yeah.
I never spoke Chinese either.
Yeah. Do you recollect... can you recall whether there were any things which you felt you missed as a result of not being in England, things you felt deprived of?
No, I didn't. Except perhaps that all the literature we read was English literature.
Yeah.
And the descriptions of the countryside, the background, I would have liked to have lived somewhere where I could see the things that were mentioned in all the poetry I read, all the books I read, everything. The background, Shanghai was not a beautiful place. It was very ugly, really, as I remember it. And we had friends that lived out in the country, but of course the country was dead flat.
Mm.
And it was totally unlike England. We had holidays in Wei Hai Wei, and that was a beautiful place. But again, totally different from England, and that I did feel I missed.
Yes.
But that was all.
Thinking directly about things you heard and saw yourself rather than through other people, that moment when that period when the Japanese occupied Shanghai, the Japanese army occupied your part of Shanghai, what are your recollections of it?
First of all, the telephone going in the morning and one of my mother's friends telling us that it had happened and that the gunboat could be heard firing its guns in the river. And then my mother being very worried because it was the day my sister was to take her French paper, her school certificate, and she was very worried that she might not be able to get to the examination hall. But they left. And then I walked to school, and I can remember that there were white bits of paper all over the ground on the way. They were leaflets dropped from aeroplanes, English on one side and Chinese on the other, saying that we were to carry on as usual. And then I got to school, and there were very few people there. And we went into the hall, and we had just a very short service, and we sang God Save the King. And then we were all sent home. And then I went back home. I walked through the streets perfectly normally. Everything seemed just as usual. I walked back home and just spent the day at home until my mother came back fairly late in the evening.
So your mother wasn't there when you arrived?
When I got home?
Yeah.
Oh, no, she had gone to work as usual.
Mm.
She had taken my sister to the examination.
Yes.
And then gone on to her school to teach.
Do you have any recollection of feeling at all apprehensive about being on your own?
A little, perhaps. Not very. There were the servants in the house, of course. And we were, of course, very used to trouble, and it just probably seemed just like another bit of trouble. Mm. We'd already had war for quite a few years by then, and I don't remember being worried very much.
Mm. Now, there was a period of about a year before you went into Ash Camp, During that year, in what ways was your life directly affected by the Japanese presence?
Well, in the first place, the school, our school building, was taken over by four schools. So, of course, we were very squashed. In the morning, we shared it with the Cathedral Boys' School, and in the afternoon, it was used by two other schools whose buildings had been taken from them. And so we had school in the mornings only, and shared the classrooms between us. And that, of course, was a big change in our lives. The other thing I remember was that periodically there'd be a bell rung, which meant that the barricades would close. And there were barbed wire barricades on just where the roads met. And they would be closed, and unless you managed to get into your own section, you'd be trapped for an hour or 2 hours while they sorted out whatever the problem was that had caused the bells to ring.
Were you ever trapped?
No. I always managed to find either a friend's house or get back home.
A refuge, yeah.
Yes.
Any other ways in which...
to wear armbands. Mm. I remember that. We had to wear armbands all the time. And you were perpetually being asked to show your pass wherever you went. You had a little pass that you had to carry. The car went, of course.
Why?
And the Japanese confiscated all cars, though I may be wrong there. We might have got rid of the car before then. We had a private rickshaw after the car went, and then that went too. Most of the time I cycled everywhere anyway. I don't remember very much more than that.
Did things change at home at all in any ways? I mean, food, how you spent the time at home?
Not that I remember.
Mm-hmm. What about your normal social and recreational life? Did you carry on doing all the same things you would previously have done?
As far as I remember, mm-hmm. I went to visit my friends just as usual. I was too young to have much that you could call a really social life.
Mm.
But I don't remember being restricted in any way.
Did you ever feel frightened or threatened?
No.
What sort of relations did you have with the Japanese who presumably you stumbled across from time to time?
I never had any trouble from them at all. Mm-hmm. But then I was by nature polite and a bit frightened of them anyway, and so I wouldn't, be likely to get any trouble.
Yes. Okay. How did the subject of internment arise? How did it become to be introduced to you? When did you first hear about it?
I don't know when I first heard of it. I couldn't tell you how long before we were actually interned that I heard about it. I don't remember even being frightened about that. I remember rather looking forward to it as a change, and consequently interesting, because it would be something different.
Mm-hmm. Did you personally have any part to play in the preparations for going into the camp?
I had to get rid of all my toys. I do remember taking a doll and a chair down to a shop and getting money for them. But I was old enough to be getting rid of toys anyway.
Yeah.
I took them down to be sold. And all the rest were thrown away. I remember also sorting out a box full of jewels and also a box of secondary jewels that were to go and be saved. They were to be sent to this store where they kept our property through the war.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that. Otherwise, not much.
What about it? Sorry.
I didn't do anything towards the sorting out of the clothes we were to take or anything like that.
You didn't help your mother in any way?
No.
Okay, right. What about the actual day of the move? Describe that to me in as much detail as you can.
Well, the day before, I went round to spend the night with one of my friends because the beds had already been packed up and sent into the camp. And in the morning, her father cycled to the camp with me on the carrier of his bicycle. And when I got there, I found my mother, and I found my sister too, and the handcart being pushed by our Chinese servant, which we'd put on everything else that we could find to take in with us. We'd already sent in three packages each. And we waited outside there for quite a long time before we went into the camp. And then they let us in, and we all went into a big hall, which was lit by an anthracite, warmed by an anthracite stove. And there was a girl there I knew who'd got a little kitten under her coat. And we waited there for quite a long time again, until we were registered into the camp. And then we had to sign papers, and I remember signing one saying that I knew I'd be shot if I tried to escape. And then after that, we were told which hut we were to go into, and ours was Z Hut. And so with all the stuff that had been on the handcart, we traipsed right round the camp and couldn't find Z Hut, but eventually we discovered where it was. And when we got in there, we found that our beds and the other things we'd sent in were already there. So we unpacked and we settled in.
What sort of impression did it make upon you, that place? Here you were, thrown out of your home into this rather confined quarter.
Well, really, just relief that the things were there, and at least we'd got beds and something, and we'd got some food with us, and everything was there. And that, in fact, I think mostly it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. And also it had no trouble from the Japanese as yet, of any kind. And I think mostly a feeling of relief, really, that at least there was shelter, and at least there were beds. And I think that more than anything.
So in your imaginings, it was probably worse than it was in the event.
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Right. I'm sorry I interrupted you. Carry on.
No, no.
Carry on.
Then we got settled in as fast as we could, beds put up and so on. And that evening we went to get a meal from the dining room. And I remember that first meal very well. It was a sort of fish. And we called it Loch Ness Monster or Heads and Tails. It was just bones and nothing else. But again, we were relieved, really, that there was food there. We'd no idea what we were going to. And some people, of course, were horrified by how filthy the place was, and they'd spent their time since they'd arrived scrubbing it all out. But we hadn't really noticed that. We'd just been so pleased to find everything. And that was the first day.
Mm-hmm.
And going to sleep in the bed at night and sort of... Really, I think mostly relief that it wasn't worse than it was. Mm.
Your mother didn't mention that business of registration.
Ah,
so it was a
yes.
surprise to me when you mentioned it. Were the children, the young people, treated exactly the same way as the adults?
No, they weren't. And it is strange that I did have to sign that bit of paper, because I was a child until I was 14. On my 14th birthday, the piece of paper outside the door, stuck onto the door, which gave your name, sex and age, also had a little thing at the end, M or F or C for child. And at the age of 14, I can remember, I rubbed out the C and changed it into an F, because I was then grown up. So I don't think really, if they'd known that I was only 13, I would have signed that. I think 14 was in fact the age at which you became an adult as far as they were concerned.
I see. Was there anything else involved in that process of reception, registration, processing, or just signing a bit of paper?
I think only the piece of paper to be signed. Mm. That's all I remember anyway.
How early on in your camp experience did you get any impression of the Japanese attitude to European children?
Oh, quite early on. They were definitely fond of children, and it was possible to get more things in for children. We even had sweets one Christmas sent in for children, boiled sweets. And I was a bit too old as far as they were concerned, the children they liked were the very young ones. And a lot of little privileges came in for the children. They had, this milk, the soybean milk came in for the children. And really, if there was anything that was wanted in the camp, they always tried to persuade them that it was necessary for the children that we should have it. And that always weighed a bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Do you recall any particular examples of kindness or callousness to the children generally or to you personally?
No, I don't. I have one photograph of myself and friends that was taken by a Japanese guard while we were in camp. And it was done because one of my friends had been giving him some English lessons. And this was his way of saying thank you for that. But I don't remember anything else.
Now, in the early period in the internment camp, the period of settling in, if you like, you are obviously limited as to what you could bring in, both because of the Japanese rules and regulations and also because of the confines of space. Were there any things that you missed in particular?
Oh, paper, of course. We brought in a certain amount, but not enough. And, of course, I went to school and the exercise books I brought in, I used them all up and then had to rub them out and start again. Atlases were confiscated by the Japanese. I remember that. We had no atlases. But we did have books. We brought in what we could, a few, but I think there was a special arrangement for the sending in of books through the British Residents Association, because there was a library in the camp. I don't remember anything else particularly.
Now, all those things you've mentioned have been school-type things. What about more personal kinds of things or more domestic kinds of things?
I don't think so. What had you got in mind, things that one might
toys,
miss?
Toys, clothes, makeup?
Well, oh, certainly there was no makeup. But, of course, I didn't miss it much because I was young. It wasn't until we left that I was beginning to think I'd like to make up. Toys I didn't bring in, but then again I was feeling that I'd outgrown my toys anyway.
Sort of in between age, eh?
Yes, yes.
Neither child nor adult.
As far as records and things go, while we were there, one of my friend's boyfriends said that he was getting a phonograph in. We all wondered what this could be. We'd never heard of a phonograph. It was coming over the wall and it was really quite exciting. And it arrived, and it was a gramophone, an ordinary wind-up one. This was much, we were quite surprised at what it was. And we had a few records, and we used to sit under the stars listening to records in summer evenings. We didn't have many, but we got to know them very well, of course, the few we did have.
What about the little hut where you lived? Was that terribly bare and stark and Spartan, or did you manage to do anything to give it a semblance of being your home?
It was pretty bleak. We didn't have much there. We didn't bring in any pictures or anything of that sort. We had a couple of shelves put up, which were crowded with tins and bits and pieces. And that was really all I remember.
Was the attitude of yourself and your sister in any ways different to the attitude of your mother? It's about this whole experience of being interned. Did you sense any differences?
Probably. I think it probably affected her more than it did us. Certainly it was much more worrying for her. I don't remember really worrying very much. There was nothing to worry about. And a child's life is so small anyway that I was fully occupied within the camp. And I don't remember having any feeling or interest much in life outside it. My life just went down to the size of that camp. And I was very, very interested in all the people who were there and became less and less interested in anything outside it at all. I know that sort of narrowing down happened very, very shortly because I had a friend who was going to be sent to Yangchow. And before we came, before we moved into camp, we'd arranged that she would come to the camp every Monday at a certain time, and we would wave to each other through the camp gates. Because it was some months before they were sent to Yangchow, we went in. We were fairly early in our being interned, and the first week I went to wave, and the second week, but by the third week, I didn't really want to go. The Japanese didn't like you near the gates anyway, but that was not the reason. My life had just become completely already narrowed right down to the limits of that camp. And I think for my mother, that couldn't have happened. You know, I think that for adults, it must have been much more of a strain. But for me, no, because what I was interested in was just the people there, the life there, and everything that was going on there, rather than anything outside.
I wonder if those 3 years' difference between yourself and your sister made the experience different between the two of you.
Yes, I should think probably. I should think probably. She was probably far more aware of what was happening.
And maybe of what she'd missed.
Yes.
Or was missing.
Yes, I think probably.
How do you spell Yangchow?
Yangchow, I think.
Thank you. Right. Now, after you had been in the camp long enough to settle into some sort of pattern and routine of life, what was a typical day like for you?
Well, first thing in the morning, we'd go along to the dining room to collect the congee and the tea. Then we'd come back, and after breakfast, I had a couple of hours schooling every day. At first, that was in a little room. We had a little room by the side of the football field, but that became flooded out, and we had to share the dining room with all the other children. So there were five classes going on at once, and if you got bored with your own, you could go and listen in on someone else's. And that was for 2 hours. It was very cold in that place in winter, and we did have a break in the middle of the 2 hours where we were allowed outside, and we used to play on skip and have country dancing and things like that. And then, after that, we went back, and of course there was a little while they got the dining room ready for lunches. And then you'd go and get your lunch, queue up for that again. We all had tallies that we handed in to make sure we only got one lunch. And after the lunch, in the afternoons, there were, I suppose you'd call it adult education classes. And most days I went to one of those. One I remember particularly was advanced mathematics, because I went to that, although I hadn't really taken school certificate, but because I was interested in maths. And there was a Roman Catholic priest, a Yorkshireman, and a young, well, I would call him Russian. He wasn't, of course. He had British nationality, but he seemed like a Russian to me. His name was Archipov, and myself. Just the three of us, and we had advanced mathematics. Another day there was an art class. This again was adult education; anyone could go. And another day there was country dancing. We also had guides. Yes, we had guides. I did a lot of things for my guide badge. There was a man there who was a captain on a ship, and he knew the stars. And I remember we took the guide astronomer's badge, and I still, you know, can remember sitting outside, you know, from the camp. Shanghai's very flat, you get a very big sky, and tracking the stars all round. That was in the afternoons. Then after that, we'd go back and have something to eat. I don't remember what, because the suppers that I mentioned at the beginning stopped very shortly after we arrived, and there were no more official meals.
Sorry, you didn't mention suppers.
Oh, didn't I? No. Ah, I'm sorry. I thought I'd mentioned the first day we came when we went to get the fish.
Yes. Sorry. Quite right.
But they stopped very shortly after we arrived. We'd only had them for a few months. But certainly we'd have something else to eat, probably bread and butter or something like that. And then in the evenings, I would meet my friends in summer, and we'd do what all teenagers do. We'd sit down and talk and listen to records and so on. Once a week there was a dance or a show or something like that. Sometimes there were other forms of entertainment, lectures going on, something of that sort. And then at 9 o'clock in winter, 10 o'clock in summer, you had to be home anyway because the lights were turned off at the main, and after that you couldn't go out again. There was a sort of curfew. There were, of course, the roll calls. I'd forgotten to mention them, one in the morning and one in the evening, occasionally one at night. But that really is a fairly typical day, I think.
Okay. Now, we'll come back to some of those things later on. But one thing which you didn't mention, maybe because you didn't do any, was work. Did you have to do any work by way of assisting your mother?
Oh, I did a certain amount, yes. I helped with the washing, I helped with the ironing. I ground up the peanuts into peanut butter in one of these mills.
Well, what were the arrangements for washing and ironing? Were they straightforward?
There was a wash room, and in it there were two irons. And you would, of course, have to take a washing over there to do it. It was queue up for the irons if you wanted to do your ironing. There was one big room set aside, and it was in this same big room that there were the little mills where you could grind anything you had to grind. And I remember grinding up the peanuts for the peanut butter, where it used to squelch out after you ground them up.
So that was your department?
Yes, I used to do that. I also chopped wood for the chatty. Nasty job in winter. There was a chopping block outside the hut, and I remember once missing the wood and getting straight down on my chilblains at the scar for ages.
But it was a nasty job because of the cold?
Oh, yes, because of the cold, yes. It was all right in summer, of course. Sometimes you had long pieces to do, and then you had to saw them first. I can remember that, too. I didn't do any camp work. Children didn't do any camp work. My sister did, of course. She helped at the dentist's. That was her job. But I was still a school child, and that was my my lotted life.
So you got away with it, eh?
Yes.
Now, remember reading the piece you wrote about the camp, you were explaining that there was, because there were so many women in the camp, there were a lot of things that were difficult for you to manage, heavy work. But you didn't actually say what was difficult for you, and I wondered, what heavy work?
Well, there were always the drains to be cleared, because that was one of the difficult things about Shanghai with its mud flats. There was drains, there was the coal for the cookhouse to be lumped. I don't know about other things, but certainly we've asked for extra help because of it.
And when this help arrived, it provided something of a stir, didn't it?
Oh, it did indeed, yes. 50 men arriving was quite a thing, and anyone new arriving into the camp, of course, created a stir. And we went down to see them coming in. There were a mixed lot that came in then. Quite a few Americans that had come off a ship that must have been caught in, I can't remember the name of the ship, that must have been caught in Shanghai when the trouble started. Several Americans came then, because up till that time we'd really been all British.
I recall your mother described this batch as the dregs. Did you share that opinion?
Oh, yes, we all felt that. Yes, indeed.
They were. Why were they so awful?
Well, I think myself that the camp they'd come from had really just sort of tried to find the ones that were the most difficult or the ones they most wanted to get rid of and sent them. I don't know whose idea it was. This was a good one, but I really do think so. There were, of course, those with, who were known by the jailers that we had in camp as people who had been let out of the prisons because the Japanese let the regular prisoners out of prison and used the prisons for their own prisoners, you see. And there were certainly some of them amongst them. There was one man who was taken straight to the sick bay and given a bath. Oh, yes. And there was a drug addict amongst them, and the man we called the murderer, because he was the one who was serving a life sentence for knifing someone in a brawl.
Yes. Now, the cause of your mother's concern with two teenage daughters is self-evident.
Oh, yes.
Did any cases arise which warranted or justified her concern?
No. I was always told I must never be out at night alone, but in fact, unknown to my mother when she was out playing bridge, I very often walked out by myself at night, and never was I once molested in any way. No, I think that was my mother's fear and not something that she need have worried about.
So these men were perhaps not so black as they were painted?
Oh, I think not. Yeah. Definitely not.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Was the camp... Were there any ways in which life in the camp was particularly educative or developing for young women of your age? I hate to be innuendo-ish
about this. Certainly, yes. It was because you knew everything that was going on. It was like life in a very, very small village would be. Or I suppose life used to be in the old tenement blocks, where you just knew everything that was happening to everyone all the time. And, oh, certainly, yes. I grew up very fast. I went in very prim, but I soon became totally unprim. Yes.
Were there any things which shocked you early on before you got used to the camp life?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I was quite badly shocked by a lot of the conversation that I heard around me all the time.
Why?
But I think it was good for me.
What was shocking?
Oh, I don't know. I just know that I was shocked. I don't think it was shocking. Mm. But certainly, it was just very down to earth all the time.
I see. So there are no particular examples of things you felt a bit sort of thrown off by.
No. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right. Yes, you lay great stress in your account on the fact that scandals, rumours, intimacies were very much shared things. You couldn't keep them to yourself. I mean,